A fight over grand jury records in the Brian Koberger matter, and I think this guy was a failed wannabe cop, I'll explain. Is there going to be justice for Dylan Rounds? Ah, neighbor disputes. What could possibly go wrong? Old mobsters do one more job, and then our dumb criminal of the day. Wait till you hear what he did. Well, let's talk about it. Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like if you do. Leave me a comment and hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And remember, you can listen to us anytime on any of your favorite podcasting apps. But first, let's support the people that support Crime Talk.
As a pet owner, you want to give your furry friend the very best. That's why Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect choice. These delicious treats not only taste great, but they also provide a wide range of health benefits for your pet. CBD has been shown to have many positive effects on dogs, including reducing anxiety, alleviating pain and inflammation, and improving overall wellness. Baked in Colorado's treats are infused with premium, full-spectrum CBD oil, meaning your pet will benefit from the whole plant extract. Not only that, but Baked in Colorado's treats are made with all-natural human-grade ingredients, so you can feel good about what you're giving your pet. They're also free from wheat, corn, and soy, making them a great option for dogs with food sensitivities. Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect way to support your pet's health and well-being. With various flavors, including peanut butter, pumpkin, and bacon, your dog will love them too. So why wait? Head to www.bakedincolorado.com today and order your dog a bag of these delicious and nutritious treats. Your pet will thank you for it.
All right, let's go ahead and open the record for June 7th, 2023 and begin with our docket. Brian Koberger, there's a fight regarding grand jury materials. And so the prosecution has filed a motion outlining what the dispute seems to be, and then I'm going to explain. All right, so the prosecutor states that unfortunately the state and the defense have not been able to reach an agreement. Consequently, and this is in regards to the release of grand jury materials, consequently, the state submits that the following for the court's consideration. Access to the audio record and transcript of grand jury proceedings is controlled pursuant to Idaho Rule 6.2. The overriding secrecy and confidentiality of grand jury proceedings is described in Rule 6.3. Reading these rules together, the only exceptions to the secrecy and confidentiality of grand jury proceedings are A, for counsel to listen to the record of the proceedings of the grand jury or to obtain transcripts of the proceedings. The list of juror votes, which may be disclosed to counsel by order of the court under a different rule, and then disclosure of what was said or done in the proceedings by order of the court if there's good cause shown. Now, the prosecution states that the defendant's motion to make available the record of all proceedings of the grand jury pursuant to Rule 6.2 appeared to go beyond what is permitted by the rule. Additionally, the defense proposes that the court unseal various grand jury proceedings and then make them subject to subsequent qualified protective orders. The prosecution says this is contrary to the requirement that grand jury records and transcripts remain sealed pursuant to the rules. And it says none of these records can or should be unsealed. Rather, the court should allow the parties to listen to the record of the proceedings of the grand jury and obtain a transcript of the proceedings, and the list of juror votes is not in there. Specifically, it requires that the list must be disclosed to the prosecuting attorney, the defendant, and the defense counsel by order of the court, which means we're not giving you anything until the court makes us give it to you. The prosecution notes that disclosure of the grand jury proceedings of what was said or done in the proceeding is beyond the audio recording transcript, and the list of jurors can only be done by order of the court for this good cause shown. And the state says that the defense has not made such a showing for the detailed list of these items that they request in their motion to make available the record of all grand jury proceedings. And then the prosecution says, hey, the Supreme Court has already said that grand jury proceedings are intended to the extent possible to be secret. And the defendant who seeks more than what the rule expressly allows must show good cause for access to the grand jury. Now they cite this case. This is they're saying there's no way you're going to be able to make this threshold showing. They said, for example, in this case titled Abdullah, the defendant, who was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to death, argued at the Idaho Supreme Court that he was entitled to the grand jury selection transcripts to determine whether there was any basis to challenge the grand jury term. And the Supreme Court in Idaho explained that the defendant must demonstrate good cause for this to allow his review of the grand jury selection transcripts. Because the defendant provided no legal basis for the court to allow the review of the grand jury transcripts, the court declined to order the district court to provide the defendants with the requested grand jury selection transcripts. And then the state respectfully submits that the appropriate course of action at this point is for the court to enter an order for the preparation and release of the transcript of the proceedings and permit the state and the defense to obtain copies of said transcripts. This is within the understanding that the transcript will remain confidential as outlined in the state's proposed order for preparation and release of the grand jury transcripts. Let's just cut to the chase here, ladies and gentlemen. What the heck are they waiting for? When somebody goes to the grand jury, you don't get information anymore. You get a formal document called an indictment, and there's going to be grand jury proceedings. And those proceedings are always transcribed, and they're always produced to the defense. It's just the way it is. If you don't go indictment, you go via complaint and information, and you get a preliminary hearing. That's how the prosecution arrested Koberger. They kept that as a placeholder, and then they went back and indicted him. They know that this is going to be turned over to the defense. Why are they waiting? Saying, oh, judge, please, you know, we'll prepare the transcript. We'd like to get that going. You got a trial date. You got motions hearings coming up. And if there's going to be challenges to the grand jury, those need to be made. And it starts with producing the transcript. Now the defense is going to say, hey, we want to know what was the selection process. Was this a specially convened grand jury, or was this a routine grand jury that just selected random people, or was it specifically for this? And it really doesn't matter. I've never seen anyone successfully challenge it, but somebody has in the past, obviously, because we all make challenges to the grand jury when we have a case that comes about that, if we think that there's some sort of impropriety that took place by the prosecution. Once again, prosecution, turn it over, get them whatever they want. That's all it is. Get them whatever they want. And hopefully you have a good enough case that you're going to convict your guy. I've told this story before. Used to have a boss who was always like, oh, you know, turn it over and we're still going to convict their client. Bottom line, people that play games, people that want to do stuff in secret, those are the ones you got to watch out for. And I hope the prosecutors in the Koberger case are not doing this. Let the people see. We are smart enough. We can figure it out if there's something hinky going on or whether it's all on the legit. All right. So let's talk a little bit more about Koberger. This guy is a police officer wannabe, and I think he's probably a narcissistic liar. Now, let's face it, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm just calling it the way I see it, all right? Now, Koberger apparently bragged of his physical prowess and his skills with a knife, which he claimed that he learned while cutting fish in a job application to become a security guard. This is where he claimed it all. Now, obviously, Brian Koberger has not always just spent his life in prison. At one time, he was applying for a job in the Pleasant Valley School District in Pennsylvania, specifically back in 2015. He mentioned in the application his year of youth law enforcement training while he was in high school. So this guy's wanted to be a cop for a long time. And Koberger claimed in his application that he cut fish to the specifications of customers. Now, his former boss said that he only lasted about 3 weeks on the job, and he never got to the stage where he learned to fillet fish. Now, the murder suspect, Mr. Koberger, said that he boxed after school every day. And according to this application, Mr. Koberger also wished to be considered for roles as a janitor or as a courier within the district if the security job didn't come out. He mentions two previous roles in his security guard job application, working at the Big Brown Fish and Pay Lakes in 2011, and the meat counter at BJ's Wholesale Club back in 2015. He said he had experience working with his father as a maintenance worker on pipes and air conditioning systems. He bragged that he lost 130 pounds while in high school, crediting boxing and running with the weight loss. And another skill was that he was being an extemporaneous speaker, competitive improvisationalist in public speaking. As it relates to his weight loss, he said that this is proof that he has the required dedication to be successful. We'll have to see how that worked out for him, obviously. Well, he got the job beginning as a casual security guard before being promoted to a part-time security guard. Then in June of 2021, Mr. Koberger resigned from his role at the school, and he says, "I understand that if I do not resign, I have the right to a school board hearing to determine if I should be dismissed for employment with the school district." Apparently put this in a letter. The exact circumstances regarding his resignation are not known to the public. Mr. Koberger was also suspended for one day without pay because of an issue with his clearance. And then Mr. Koberger's boss at the Big Brown Fish and Pay Lakes Fish Farm said that the former Washington University student never used a knife while working there for him. He said that when kids came here, their jobs are to keep the place clean, pick up paper all day, help customers catch fish, fix poles, and then when they try to train them how to fillet fish. And if they got good at it, then they can fillet fish, specifically the customer's fish. He said that Koberger never reached that point because he left the job after only 3 weeks. But I think it's interesting. Look at this picture back in his high school days where he's in the youth program, kind of like a ROTC for police officers, I guess. This guy's wanted to be a cop. And for whatever reason, he can't be a cop. There's something that's not right with this guy where when they screen him out, the psychological evaluation stuff, he is eliminated. I think that's what we're going to learn. I have a friend who just went through the police academy, and they are very rigorous when it comes to the psychological part to make sure that you're a stable person. And it's almost like maybe some guy that couldn't be a cop was going to show the cops that he could get away with something because he's smarter and better than anyone else. I don't know. Let me know what you think in the comments below. Will there be justice for Dylan Rounds? Well, James Brenner, the man accused of killing Dylan Rounds, made his way to a courtroom just the other day for a hearing that lasted about 10 minutes. He's accused of fatally shooting Dylan Rounds last May while squatting on Mr. Rounds' property in Utah. This small town is about 200 miles west of Salt Lake City. Now, Mr. Brenner only spoke once in court to confirm that he was okay with the schedule for his upcoming hearings. And the defendant's attorney asked the judge to appoint another attorney, a co-counsel, on the case. The judge said that he would consider the request but made no final decisions. And the attorney said that he was having challenges dealing with the situation with Mr. Brenner because he's facing both state and federal charges. And Mr. Brenner is in federal custody. He's in primary federal custody. The feds don't give you up unless you can prepare. The district attorney can prepare in the state an 11-point memorandum. And that's what they refer to it as, the 11-point memorandum, to be released from the state from the federal custody to go to state custody for a court appearance. And this 11-point memorandum must be done every time. And so the attorney knows that you got to get permission from the feds to bring Mr. Brenner into the state court. So for those of you who aren't familiar with this, Mr. Rounds' body has not been found, but evidence connected to the victim recovered near Mr. Brenner's trailer. Apparently there was a dirt pile found with the 19-year-old boots, and his phone was recovered from the bottom of a nearby pond. Mr. Brenner was charged with aggravated murder and abuse or desecration of a human body back in March of this year, and he had already been in custody on federal firearm charges since June of 2022. Now, according to arrest affidavits, investigators also recovered a video from Dylan's phone, which appeared to show Mr. Brenner with bloodstains on his shirt and arms as he was cleaning his gun. The video was recorded about 30 minutes after Dylan got off the phone with his grandmother, which was the last time anyone in his family had heard or spoken to Dylan. Mr. Brenner's next court appearance is scheduled for July 31st. Ooh, those little recordings, those video recordings, isn't that just interesting? Kind of like the old Murdoch case, that's what did him in. Next, neighbor disputes. What could possibly go wrong? So please meet, and I think I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Susan Lorenz, L-O-R-I-N-C-Z. Lorenz, that's where we're going with. Anyway, she's accused of shooting Ajiki A.J. Owens dead in front of her son, who was 10, because of a dispute between the pair. They were neighbors. Now, Lorenz told police during her interview that Owen's children had been trespassing on her property in Ocala, Florida, before, you know, she was forced to shoot their mother. Now, neighbors of Lorenz claimed that she had a problem with kids and would record them before taunting them with slurs as well as waving her guns around in the direction. Get off my lawn! I guess that's probably what she was saying, right? So neighbors would say that Lorenz would harass her kids, adding everybody in the neighborhood has feuded with this lady over children. Well, it's alleged that Miss Owens went over to Lorenz's home to confront her over allegations she threw a rollerblade at one of her children earlier in the day and smashed a tablet before swinging an umbrella at the kids. Well, the sheriff's office confirmed that Lorenz was charged with manslaughter with a firearm, culpable negligence, battery, and two counts of assault. Yeah, police were under pressure to arrest and charge Lorenz in a case that has put Florida's Stand Your Ground back in the spotlights. The sheriff described this as simply a killing. Now, the arrest affidavit revealed that Lorenz had called 911 at 8:54 p.m. on June 2nd to complain that the children were trespassing, telling officers they were shouting outside her door. Minutes later, officers then received several other emergency calls advising shots heard in the area, with Lorenz calling again to say that a female tried to break down her door while yelling, and she shot her. Owens, although shot, still alive, told her son to call 911 after being hit by the bullet. The young boy told officers she was only knocking on the door. Needless to say, his mother was rushed to the hospital, where she later died. When speaking with officers after the arrest, Lorenz claimed that Owens screamed, "I'm going to effing kill you." She said she banged on the door so hard everything started shaking and she thought the door was going to come off. Lorenz said that she then panicked and thought, oh my God, she's really going to kill me this time, before fetching her firearm from a trash can in her bedroom. Now, the police reports states that Ms. Lorenz also claimed that Owen said, you don't talk to my sons that way. I'm going to effing kill you. Lorenz said that she fired the Remington 380 from her kitchen and admitted to owning a .22 Ruger, claiming she only purchased the gun for protection after an altercation with Miss Owens previously. She told police that she felt like she was in mortal danger and was fearful for her life before claiming she never intended to hit the victim and she hit really high. Now, the affidavit shows that there were two surveillance cameras inside of Lorenz's residence, with one facing the patio and the other facing attached to the sliding door. She claimed that the cameras are functioning, but only record motion, and at night sometimes do not capture anything at all. The cameras were accessed through her phone, and after initially declining to give the passcode, which is her right to do, she ultimately gave the phone to the officers with the passcode, and they did not see any recording after 8:40 p.m. the night of the incident, and she denied deleting any of the recordings. Now, Miss Lorenz was left in possession of her phone for 2 hours, being placed inside of a police car, and footage shows her accessing it briefly. It's unclear, however, if she saw anything on the phone and camera, and that was ultimately taken into evidence. Now, Lorenz also claimed that Owens previously ripped a metal no trespassing sign out of the ground and threw it at her, but no arrests were made at that time. Police records show the authorities have been called to the property 6 times since 2021 in relation to Miss Lorenz and Miss Owens. Neighbors told police that Lorenz was upset by kids being kids and they didn't understand why, before admitting they had heard allegations she made racial slurs at the children. When interviewed by police, one of Owens' sons claimed that Lorenz had previously called them butts and jackasses, as well as saying, "This isn't the Underground Railroad, slave." Speaking at his press conference, the sheriff said, "I want to thank my detectives for working tirelessly to invest this case completely. And I also want to thank Miss Owens' family for their patience as we conducted the diligent investigation that we were bound by law to conduct. And Miss Lorenz's fate is now in the hands of the judicial system, which the sheriff trusts will deliver justice in due court. And I will be saying a prayer for Miss Owens' children and the rest of her family. I'd ask you all to do the same." Now, Owens' family just happens to be represented by lawyer Ben Crump. And they're also relieved that Lorenz has been arrested. And Crump wants the Stand Your Ground laws repealed. Now, Miss Lorenz has set up a Make My Day defense. She was in her home, and she said that she was in fear. She told that to the police. She set up the defense. I'd be curious if she talked to a lawyer beforehand or do what she was needed to say. Now, the police clearly believe that there's nothing to support that defense. They charged it that way. Or maybe they charged it, say, hey, we'll charge it, we'll let the DA figure it out, and we'll let 12 good citizens of the state of Florida to decide whether the shooting was justified or whether it was a homicide. I think we're going to have to follow that case. I think it's going to get ugly. Next, a bunch of old mobsters do one last job. An old crew of alleged mobsters with links to the Lucchese and Gambino crime families were arrested yesterday in connection with a $2 million daylight diamond heist of an elite Manhattan jeweler. Now, the robbers posed as construction workers before pulling guns on store workers at Bayco Jewels on Madison Avenue on January 3rd and another unarmed store on Elizabeth Street before making off with an estimated $2 million worth of jewelry. Now, among the accused is Lucchese crime family associate Frank Skip DiPietro, who's 65, who was previously serving a 19-year federal prison sentence for a mob killing. The other men arrested were named as Vincent Sergio, who's 69, and Vincent Spagnola, 65, Michael Selleck, 67, in connection with the Bayco Jewels heist. Now, the defendants were arrested on June 6th in New York and in New Jersey, and they were taken to the Manhattan Federal Courthouse, and they were advised pursuant to a magistrate judge of their rights and the charges. Now, they've been charged with one count of the Hobbs Act robbery and one count of conspiracy to commit Hobbs Act robbery, each of which carries a maximum of 20 years in prison. They've also been charged with one count of brandishing a firearm during and in connection with a crime of violence, which carries a mandatory minimum sentence of 7 years to be imposed consecutive to any other sentence. Now, Bayco Jewelers is the jeweler to the stars with its gems worn by the likes of Beyonce and Rihanna. To actually book an appointment there at their showroom, prospective shoppers first must pass a credit check to see if they are worthy of shopping there. And footage obtained by the FBI, the surveillance footage, shows the robbers dressed in construction gear nearby before heading to the Bayco Jewelers and posing as workmen outside of the shop front. The footage then shows the men entering the store as its employees were setting up the storefront before threatening them at gunpoint. It is alleged that DiPietro yelled, "Give it to me," as his associate, Michael Selleck, told the worker to turn around and get in the closet. Once again, cell phone records linked several of the suspects to one another before, during, and after the holdup, according to detectives. Of course it did. This sounds like something out of a movie where a bunch of old mobsters get out of prison, gonna do one more heist for the big one, and it didn't quite turn out so well. The technology got them. Surveillance cameras, the cell phones, they're going to prison. They're all in their 60s. They're gonna die in prison. And finally today, our dumb criminal of the day. This guy in Florida was dubbed by the sheriff's office as the dumb criminal of the week. Hello. I think we trademarked dumb criminal of the day and the dumb criminal of the week. Sheriff, I need compensation. It was my idea. Anyway, apparently he was caught trying to assemble a stolen electric Razor scooter in front of a Target. Exactly, the same Target that he's accused of stealing it from. The man was witnessed walking past cashiers out of Target's front door without paying for the scooter, which had a value of $539. Police say instead of fleeing the crime scene, the man stopped on the sidewalk in front of the store and started assembling a scooter. A responding deputy caught the man before he could finish assembling the scooter, and the only ride he got was one to the local jail. Shockingly, drugs were found on the man, later identified as Patrick Vandermeer Miller, taken to jail and charged with petite theft and possession of drug paraphernalia. I wonder if Target even called to say that there was a theft. Well, I guess they did. Somebody did, right? The police showed up. Target employees couldn't do anything. This guy was completely unconcerned that anyone from Target would do anything, because that's the policy of most stores these days. Good thing the police showed up. Well, our dumb criminal, that's right, Mr. Patrick Vandermeiden Miller, you are truly our dumb criminal of the day. And maybe we'll bring back the dumb criminal of the week so the sheriff doesn't say that I abandoned my my trademark. I guess we'll have to look into that. All right, thanks for watching. Hope you have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.